The journey of life is long and often difficult, yet we must approach it day by day and be present in each moment. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show. Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please go to blackenstudios.com or visit their Facebook page. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. My name is Michael Eric Owens, your co-host, and I'm in the studio with
your side co-host, DT.
As always, man, I can't do this without you.
We
got to come up with, like, you know, Batman, the dynamic duel or something, man, because this is, we can't do this alone,
it's
man.
It's dynamic. It's definitely dynamic. And we're back in Blacken Studios one more time.
And it's, you know, so how you been?
Man, everything is good. You know, That's a good question. You know, how are you doing,
man? But this is a magnificent day for you, man. Because I got to give a shout out, congratulate you on buying your first home,
man. I appreciate it, man. It's really been an interesting process. I now understand the stress that people feel going through something like that, and it's been a great thing, man.
Well, I tell you what, you are a great example to young men. I mean, you have a dynamic career. You're educated. You have a piece of the rock.
Piece of the rock.
And it's a beautiful example. I mean, folks, you're listening, and I hear oftentimes, DT, that, you know, young black men don't have examples. Where we got one here in you, and the things that you're doing and the things that you're achieving. I couldn't be more proud of you, dear brother, and I'm thrilled, man.
You're going to make me drop one.
Can I come over with the fork, man? Because I'm going to be hungry.
Oh, please. Got some work to do.
Oh, okay.
We got some work to do.
But I want to eat, man.
That's going to be meals included.
Okay,
you know,
okay.
We're going to take care of you, but there is work to be done.
Well, congratulations.
I appreciate it.
You know, as we came into, you know, our opening today, and it is a tweet that we put out, but also we put it out on Facebook, coming from the One Mic, One Voice show. The journey of life is long and often difficult, but also beautiful.
In the same breath,
you know,
right?
If you never knew pain, you could not know joy, right?
Gotta be contrast. You
know, it's gotta be contrast.
That's another thing that make life so great, man, that we can compare, or not even compare, but just, you know, be able to contrast our life to bring some balance into it and
Listen,
really see.
If you've never been sad, right,
mm-hmm.
you can't know happiness.
Right.
And so you're right, you know, to be able to know both of those worlds intimately, I think is, and to embrace them as what they are. I mean, if you were 100% always happy, I don't think anybody would want to be around you. You know what I mean?
Listen, you know, I've seen happiness piss people off. You ever been at the job and it's like, you know, that one coworker that's just always so chipper, always so upbeat, you know, and it's just like, get out of here.
Hey, DT, that's the one that's going home at night, you know, playing Russian roulette, you know, because it's all a facade. Because, listen, you know, we all go through these ebb and flows, and you know, today is about, you know, just celebrating you and that achievement. And I just think it's a beautiful thing, because not everyone is as disciplined. And even everyone is not put into that position where they're capable to do that.
Yes,
and
sir.
So and I know you're a humble brother, man. So I know what I say to you. You take it all in the right perspective. But I'm ready for the, you know, pool party.
Oh, man, it's going down. It's,
you know, look
down.
At Richard. Yeah,
I'm ready. Richard, you can't come, man. You're like,
what you mean?
I don't know. What you mean? I don't know,
Richard, you had to know the password or something.
It's the Mohawk. Nah, man, I'd love to have both you guys there celebrating and just enjoying that with me, man. That's going to be really
fun. Well, we're looking forward to it. And again, I want to say to you, you folks, we got a lot going on in our world, and every time, you know, we think it can't get more bizarre. Let me use that phrase, more bizarre. All we have to do is just turn on the radio or turn on the television, and we just see more bizarre things happening for a moment. And again, I don't want to be critical is not the best word to describe what I don't want to be, but lack of a workable mind at the moment. These black pastors that have taken time to meet with Donald Trump, I don't see the value in doing that. Help me, man, because maybe I got the issue, okay? But help me understand value. And let me just say this. We had a Facebook comment that said, you know, it was good because we need to listen to people that disagree with us.
It was good because we need to listen to people who disagree with us.
Yeah, so those pastors met, and it was good because we need to be open to people that disagree with us.
That was from Donald Trump's side?
No, that was just from a Facebook.
You know. I mean, all perspectives considered, you know, I think that for Donald Trump, this is his time to kind of like the – we didn't get a chance to talk about that, but about like Ben Carson put out the rap tape, right?
Oh, yeah, so, yeah.
And so
yeah,
these yeah, people, these political leaders who have no connection to the communities that they're trying to reach out to, you know, you bring somebody in who, you know, supposedly represents that community and is supposed to give voice to everybody who looks like those people. Like you, I do not also understand the reasoning behind it, but that's kind of like the way things have been for a while when they bring in these black people to represent people who really don't have their interests at heart.
Well, that one pastor, I saw him on CNN. I forget what his name is. Maybe we can look him up right quick. But the one pastor that was in opposition to this meeting called them prostitutes, and they were very upset. And he said, well, maybe I shouldn't have said that, because he said prostitutes actually get paid, and you went in there and left and you got nothing.
Wham, bam, thank you.
Yeah, yeah, you got nothing. And and he also called them pawns, you know, in the hands of, I assume, Mr. Trump. I'm gonna go some place that I don't necessarily like to go. DT,
wait a minute, I'm gonna go there. Let me get the meter out real quick. Let's get our color chart out. Okay,
right. I'm gonna try to keep the color from changing. But I'm gonna go there in the sense that these pastors. And I'm not just going to pick on this 100 pastors, but man, these pastors in the black community that are robbing the black community, number one, of their resources, number two, show no leadership whatsoever. Here is a man that has been verbally abusive, visceral to minorities. Why in the world would you even give him audience? It's a waste of time. Now, to listen to someone that disagree, but to engage in hate debate? First of all, the meeting would not have been a dialogue, but an interrogation, in my opinion. Why have you said these things? Why is this view of black people? Why do you think it is acceptable for a Black Lives Matter person to be roughed up at your? How can you condone violence, Mr. Trump? Why was this not the conversation? If you're going to meet and you want to come to some type of resolution, you want him to understand what black lives are about. It just shows to me that give a black pastor a spotlight, and he'll jump in it,
And no matter what the consequences may be, you know what? Let me. And then I heard the one pastor say this was historic because, you know, we never have you had 100 black pastors meet with a GOP candidate. There's a reason why. And folks, get this. Get this. I want you to understand this. The Republican Party is not a platform for minorities. Okay. And that's okay because the majority of minorities don't vote for them. Right. That's okay. It's nothing wrong with catering to the president. Did not, when he was running for office, how many times did he come to Oklahoma?
He was at our state fair.
Okay. That's about it. Okay. Why? Because he knew he wouldn't win a county in Oklahoma, which he didn't. He didn't win one county out of 77. Why spend your resources with voters that are not going to vote with you? So the platform is not designed for minorities. I get it. But if you're going to come and say you want to engage with minorities, you got to come and experience all the angst that comes along with that. Yeah,
and all the dynamics of minority
absolutely.
Life.
All the dynamics.
Because the pastors don't solely represent all parts.
Listen.
And like you said, a guy was saying, you know, how historic this was, and, you know, there's never been black pastors to come through and represent on this scale. But
let me tell you what would have been historic. What would have been historic if Donald Trump had met with the Black Lives Matter movement? Would have been historic if these pastors, these 100 pastors, get together and feed the hungry? Would it be historic if these pastors would get together and do some economic development in their black communities? That's what would be historic. What would be historic is even these pastors that have 5 or 10 members would leave their storefront churches and unify with churches around their area so that they could do more within their community. Man, that would be historic.
20 churches on one block.
All Baptists.
And supposedly serving the same purpose but can't come together.
Come on, man. You know, I saw that, man. I said, this is foolishness. It's foolishness that you would give audience to Donald Trump. And what Trump wanted out of that, and it came clear, he wanted an endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's what it was. Okay. That's exactly what it was.
He wanted an endorsement because he realizes this, DT, that we have a segment in our society that still, and I'm going to say this in the black community, and folks might get upset at me, but that's okay. I'm going to say it anyway. We have people in the black community that don't know how to think for themselves. Mm. And these pastors, now don't get me wrong, I know some legitimate, loving pastors that are great leaders. They're on the front lines. I support them. Don't get me wrong. But I'm going to tell you what, there is a segment of the pastorate in the black community are nothing more than pimps in the pulpit. Mm. And guess what? They people can't think for themselves. And what Mr. Trump knows that if he can get you, then everybody that's under you is going to vote for him, regardless of the fact that you have no place on his platform.
And how does he keep lying to everybody about his place in the running? Like, he's number one everywhere. Like, oh, yeah, we're winning in Detroit and we're winning in Chicago. It's like, man, really? Where the polls are? Where are these polls at?
Well, I mean, he can't get more than 30% of the vote in the Republican race for the White House. And so that's not even half of the Republican
electorate. Let him tell it. He's going to be our next president.
Well, you know, the pastors, as we saw in that video, they prayed over him. You know, they prayed that God would, you know, while he's looking around, his head is not even bowed, his eyes not even closed. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that there is like this one way of praying. But there is a traditional way of praying. You know, when you people pray, you normally bow your head. I'm not out. You know, I could go anywhere. I go overseas, and they said, "Well, let us pray." I look around, folks bowing their head. Well, he's looking around. He got his eyes open. He's turning. He's lost. Listen, folks. Again, I'm freedom of religion. You can believe in whatever you want to believe. You can be an atheist. I support you being an atheist. Okay? It's your belief. It's who you choose to serve or not serve. I don't have an issue with that. But if you talk about the Bible is your favorite book, and when they ask you what do you like in the Bible, and you say, well, that just told me, man, come with a scripture.
Drop some knowledge on
them. Drop some knowledge. if you in the book. And but I mean, I don't want to make this is more about black pastors, DT, in my opinion, than it is about Donald Trump. You know, Trump could be anything, man. Trump, I could say Trump is a Trump card. He could be he could be anything. He could be the carrot. He could be the diamond. But the fact is that we have these pastors that lack wisdom and understanding. Don't even understand the influence they have on people and the responsibility they have, the social responsibility that they have to stand up against hate speech, to stand up against those that favor the privileged class in this. Man, who are they members?
I have no idea. Okay. You know what? After the meeting, though, he did say that they came to solutions. So what does that say to you? I mean, what, like you said,
them and Donald Trump came to solutions.
The conversation, like you said, would have been more of an interrogation, trying to figure out, you know, what is your purpose, you know, in this room, first of all. But then, you know, like I'm saying, they're saying that they came to a solution. They found
common ground.
What do you think those conversations could have been about?
I have no clue, because I think you had a room full of non-socially conscious pastors that do not have their hand on the pulse. They do not understand the political system. They do not understand how politics affects the lives of everyday people, their parishioners, their congregants. They have no knowledge. So you can bring the ignorant into a room and you can reach a consensus, but it's a consensus of ignorance. And so, in my opinion, again, DT, is more about these pastors. They've been doing this forever, man. Would you see these, like you were saying the other day, the KKK, they had a black dude there.
Yeah, the token.
They've been doing this forever.
Token,
okay? Negro. It's less because they understand that there's a segment, folks. And again, I know some of you don't like what I'm saying, but there's a segment of black people that do not have the critical thinking skills to discern for themselves. Just is.
Yeah.
Just is. I mean, it's in the book. Pick one up. You know, there's knowledge everywhere, but we have a community of folks, man, just want to be led by somebody, want to be a pastor. You know, I heard people tell me, well, I go to pastor such and such church. I said, well, man, is it the church? Is it the pastor's church? Or is it God's church? I'm confused. We have people their views of religion and God and spirituality is just so skewed because they cannot think for themselves. They have been told how to think, DT.
And I think that you speak to a lack of leadership, you know, like you're talking about the pastors. And that echoes throughout their congregation when you have these people who come out and make these very ignorant comments and complaints. And it's like, man, what have you learned in there?
Absolutely. Where are you going?
Where are you going?
You're still left in the dark. So, I don't know what to say with that. That's an ongoing story. They're getting a lot of criticism.
We'll listen out for the solutions that have been brought to the table.
Yeah. I'm curious about the what they worked out and how they're going to change the condition for black and brown people in this country. I think they're trying to distance themselves from it, and that's why I say it's a lack of wisdom and not understanding what the outcry was going to be, because people are upset. I mean, black people are upset because they're saying, you know what, this was ridiculous. It was a ridiculous meeting. and it served no purpose.
History will speak of us.
You know, Trump, I don't know if you heard about this, but Trump had told MSNBC, probably some of the Black Lives Matter folks called them up, meaning the pastors, and said, you shouldn't, probably, now he doesn't have any factual data on this, but he says here that that they probably, some of the Black Lives Matter folks called them up and said, you shouldn't be meeting with Trump because he believes that all lives matter.
And he said that too. He said that in his post interview of the meeting, he was saying, one of the reporters asked him, "So what do you think about Black Lives Matter?" And he said, "Well, of course, you know, I think Black Lives Matter. I think that White Lives Matter, and of course, I think that all lives matter." And I was like, "Okay, so of course, there's going to be justification for all lives, even if you try and specify what do you think about Black Lives Matter." But it's also kind of disheartening that everything now associated with Black people will also be associated with the Black Lives Matter movement, whether or not they are connected.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and I mean, it, again, I just think in the end,
like, Black issues is now Black Lives Matter, like everything. Yeah,
like, exactly. Well, you know, it goes back to what we talked about. One person is a reflection of the entire group of Black people, right? We're monolithic.
Monolithic, right.
And we can't think for ourselves. I just think it's crazy what we're seeing. And it says here that over the Thanksgiving weekend, the Trump campaign promoted a Monday event at Trump Tower where black pastors were supposed to endorse him. However, news of the meeting outraged many Black activists and the opposition and produced an open letter from more than 100 Black leaders and scholars. And that's the good thing about all of this, DT, is that, yeah, you may have this theatrics, okay, portrayed out, but you have this blowback from
people who are opposed to it, right?
That people that see this theatrics and say, no, it's wrong. You can't do this. These people don't speak for Black folk. Mm. I've read where one pastor told him he need to repent of his campaign rhetoric, this, that, and the other thing. You know what? This is what I'm going to say. Let me back up here for a minute. Even if you're going to meet with them, do an open forum. Hmm. Do it live. Do a town hall.
So you think it shouldn't have been so private, so excluded.
Do a town hall, okay, Mr. Trump, with 100 Black pastors. Let me pick them.
Yeah.
See how comfortable that's going to be for you. You know, yeah. Or do a town hall with 100 Black people. Do a town hall on the south side of Chicago if you care about Black lives, okay? I mean, again, I mean, if you want to send a message that you are concerned about minority people, meet minority people where they are at, and I would beg to differ that you will have very few candidates that will do that. I don't know, DT. I don't know where else to go with that, man. It's just so bizarre for me that I thought we needed to talk about it and show our disdain for what has transpired. And I hope that those pastors will be wiser in the future.
Indeed.
Indeed, man. Chicago.
The Tale of Two Cities, Chicago.
Chi-town.
Man, it's really interesting. I watched some documentary footage of Chicago, learned about the very hard and harsh reality of South Side and West Side Chicago, and seeing some of the more glorious sides of downtown and the North Side, where, you know, people are doing really well for themselves. Spike Lee made a comment recently, you know, that the inspiration behind the Chi-Raq movie, you know, one, that there's a really increase in murder rate and everything that's happened terribly up there, but also that, you know, it needed to be shed light on. Like it's like we talked about in our last episode, there have been more murders there than happened in the Iraq war. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. He said that we have failed our youth as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Of course, you know, I just came back from Chicago, and you know, put a plug in for my daughter. I had a, you know, part in Chirac. And I love Chicago. I'm going to be honest with you. I love Chi-Town.
I hadn't been since I was a kid, so we got to get back up there.
Man, I'm telling you, we got to take a trip, DT. I love it. My first stop was at Giordano's. I had to get some pizza. but I love Chicago, but you are exactly right. When you think about Inglewood, South Side, and the entire South Side, you talked about the West Side. Man, there's just a massive, the 9-year-old boy, again, you know, we will say it again here on One Mic, One Voice, that was father was in gangs and retaliation for him. They shot that boy in the face. Wow. 9-year-old boy. I just, you know, children were off the table. I mean, it was a time, but that was just an honor code.
You just don't do that.
You just don't touch kids. And now it's, everybody's, oh man, it's just in change, you know, just horrifically. But you know, this brother McDonald shot 16 times, and the firing, charging of the police officer, and
have they been able to speak to him yet?
No, they have not. But what we're gonna do? We're gonna take a break, and then we're gonna come back, and we're gonna talk about what Mayor Manuel has done in Chicago in light of this shooting. And I just really want to, DT, get your opinion on whether or not you think he's done enough. Was this the right thing to do, and so forth. But as we go into break, on our Facebook page, folks, One Mic, One Voice Book Project, Racial Profiling Through the Eyes of a Black Man. We're calling for 2-3-page written accounts of your experience with racial profiling. So many in our country today believe racial profiling is a thing of the past. Although scholars have written about this phenomenon, black men have rarely been consulted on it and the impact it has on their lives. So One Mic, One Voice wants to get your story out, folks. Listen, we want you to share your story and correct the critics who continue to call it a figment of the black man's imagination. And if you're interested in participating, please. And we only have a limited amount of spots, and people are sending their requests in that they want to participate. All you have to do is just say, send us a message on Facebook. You can send us a message. You'll hear that in a minute at the break where you can hit us up at. But just simply say, I want to be involved. We want to get this book out. We want to shed light on this situation, and we appreciate you. Don't go anywhere, DT.
We'll be right back.
Be sure to like us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. Follow all of our content on the OneMicOneVoice.com website, or be sure to email me at dt@OneMicOneVoice.com or Michael Eric Owens at OneMicOneVoice.com. Keep listening.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Back to Chicago. Mayor Manuel has basically fired the police chief. I guess that what he is, the sheriff or whoever's in charge, whatever his title is, has removed him from office, request his resignation in recent days. But this what kind of troubles me and came to my mind about this situation. It appears that there's been a conspiracy to cover up the video. They have officers going in a convenience store, which was near there, erasing part of the tape. Convenience store or fast food place, I can't recall which exactly it was. But this conspiracy. So what do you think removing the head guy is going to do for this problem in Chicago?
I mean, I think that it's a reflection of them trying to show, you know, if we knock the leader down, I guess, you know, of course this man knew, I mean, he knew who his players were. He knew who had on his police staff, the types of individuals that they were. They go through this extensive process before they even admitted it to the which should probably be looked at too. But I think he did what he felt was the right thing to do, take out the head guy, and hopefully the chain of command will fall where it needs to.
Do you think that the mayor of Chicago, was unaware of the video?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
My next question is, do you think if the mayor of Chicago had said, I want this video released to the public, it would or would not have been released?
I think it would have.
Okay. So this is a concern now. The concern is that the corruption goes all the way up to the mayor. Mm-hmm. And the fact that if he wanted this videotape out there, he would have made sure that it was out among the people. And the fact that they paid them $5 million right off the bat, as soon as they saw the tape.
$5
million. $5 million they paid the family, okay?
Wow.
$5 million. So this says to me, they wanted to hush them up. They never wanted this video to come to light.
Right.
If and this is, I guess, maybe a statement, then maybe you can expound on it. If the police officers will not come forward with information about corruption within their own ranks, how can they expect black people in the community to come forward and share information about murders in their own community?
Wow.
So what do you think about that?
Yo, that's deep right there, man. Because like you're saying, if there are some reserve for even turning in a fellow officer, somebody that you know is doing, you know, who knows what. But I mean, how could people in the society, how could people in the communities hold themselves to the same standard of being as upright and upstanding as a police officer?
Especially, get this, especially when I know they are corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a situation I'm in. I started to rethink this thing, don't snitch. Now, again, you know how I feel about it. I know how you feel about this. It is the right thing to do to come forward and to put any information about anyone that has been murdered in any community. And I will say Sierra Pierce, if you know information about his killer, he's still out there, you need to come forward. Let me say this though, DT. I have a better understanding now, because if I'm in a situation where I know the killer, but I know the people that I'm going to go to are corrupt, how are they going to, yeah. If I'm afraid of them.
You're in between a rock and a hard place, huh?
Are they going to protect me? I mean, when I see them shooting Brother McDonald 16 times, okay, and I see somebody get shot in my neighborhood, do I think that these people are going to protect me?
How could you?
Okay. So now we got a real problem, okay? Now we have to change the conversation. We just can't say, well, black people, you need to come forward. Who am I going to come forward to?
Hmm.
Okay. Because I now see you as the enemy.
Hmm.
Okay. So you're asking me to call the enemy that might put I'm already afraid. I mean, I see what they did to the little boy. I see what they do to my family. I'm already afraid. So my whole thing is, it has become even more complex. The police lack of integrity on their part is an example to the community. You won't tell on your own, but you're criticizing me because I won't tell. It's a dilemma.
And so in the host clause situation, of course, we had the women victims who were put in the same situation, backs against the wall, previous charges against them.
Absolutely.
You know, the whole nine.
Absolutely.
And then in that guilt, you know, you cannot go out and say, this man did this to me, because guess what? Now there's going to be further investigation upon you, your credibility, your story, your background, all of this stuff that you probably don't want.
Because you're not there to serve and protect me.
Mm.
You're there to
exploit.
Yes. Yes. And how did, and I'm glad you brought that up, because even in our great city, how did this man get an all-white jury? We're talking about the police officer, a Holtzclaw, right?
Holtzclaw.
Holtzclaw. Police officer that is accused of 36 counts of, and includes rape, sodomy, of all African-American women, okay, on the northeast side of town. I must have been doing it for years. Got an all-white jury. Now, we're talking in the 21st century. Now, there are black people in Oklahoma City. Okay, you happen to be two of them speaking right now. So how is that possible not to have one minority on the jury?
That is strange to me, and not even because, you know, it's all-white jury or whatever, but America symbolizes and reflects a very diverse population of people. So why shouldn't that reflect in the jury?
Let me interject.
I mean, why isn't that jury reflective of the people who live in the country? Is it all white people?
You would think so. You would
like
think
you're
that,
saying there are two brothers right now on the microphone.
Oh, absolutely.
There are plenty more black people in the state of Oklahoma.
I didn't get a call. You get a call?
Nope.
I didn't. Yeah. No. Richard, you get a call? Oh, okay. Not scientific poll, but I couldn't believe it. I mean, I attended one of the protests down there, and it was a great number of people. I can't believe in the modern era that it is still possible for someone to have an all white jury, and all the victims are black. Okay. But what else is just appalling, DT, is this lack of national coverage.
Right. I'm like, why isn't this national news, man? Why isn't the whole world covering this story right now? Because it goes back to what we're talking about, the accountability for the officers, not speaking out on each other, because there have been things like this going on for years.
Yes.
I mean, it's now that we have exposure with camera phones and people, yes, you know, bringing light to the situation, but does it not negate the fact that it has not already been happening?
And you, again, you know, our world is so tainted by race. And I can, maybe there has been, so maybe I'm wrong, and maybe some of our listeners can bring that to my attention, send me some info on the time that you had a black man accused of all of these crimes against all white women that was not nationally known. Okay. I mean, that stuff gets press. I mean,
nonstop.
Oh, and I want to give a kind of a visual for people. This is how acceptable having a white jury in our society has become. Yeah, you have people that are outraged, but you have some that are not outraged. Let me have a white defendant walk into the courtroom with an all-black jury. Has that ever happened?
Look, I don't even think you could imagine it.
My mind, like right now, I'm really trying to visualize that being a real scenario and it going over in a positive way. I don't see it. Like, that's a part of my mind that has not been able to access. I mean, my imagination is great. I mean, I can see a lot of stuff, but I don't, man, what?
All black jury.
No, not happening. Not happening, man. Not happening.
What signal would that send?
Listen, could you imagine the face on that person walking into the courtroom? Like,
Yeah. He would think, oh, I'm done.
They set me up.
I'm done.
It's over with.
Oh, absolutely. I don't stand a chance. Okay.
What's interesting, though, man, is that, it's funny that the reasons why some of the ladies said that they would not come forward is that simply that they were black and nobody would believe them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So being of another culture, color, whatever, automatically give you credibility in some realms just because you look trustable.
Oh, absolutely. When some of the testimony has demonized these women. Mm. I guess one, and she should not have done this, but one showed up under the influence of marijuana. Mm. Okay. I don't know if she was.
She's probably under a lot of stress.
You know, hey, you
it's
know.
Like, man, I didn't say anything for this amount of time.
And you know.
Now hey, today is the day I got to fess up. I got to
smoke me a joint before man. I come in, you know. which I think one should not show up to your trial high. Don't do it. Maybe another PSA. You know, one mic, one voice. Don't show up to your trial high. Won't go right for you.
No,
but you know that still doesn't. Just because a person shows up in that condition doesn't mean they were not raped. Doesn't mean they were not abused sexually. And I just think it goes to your credibility. Well, if she would do this and maybe she would lie. 36 counts? Is everybody lying? Mm-hmm. That's what I don't understand. You have this overwhelming evidence, this collaborating evidence. I hope those white jurors, and let me back up. I'm not saying white people can't make the right decision. That's not what I'm saying here. I have white friends that I've had all my life. Love them. They would give me the shirt off their backs and vice versa. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's not representative of our legal system. Mm-hmm. If it was an all black jury, I would say it wasn't representative of our legal system. I mean, when I go, I don't know if I walked in, I saw an all white jury, I would think, man, it's over with. I walk in, I see an all black jury, I might be like, man, you know I'm getting off.
They might sympathize with me. Yeah. They might feel me.
Exactly. Exactly.
But it's like that comfortability and just knowing that you're going to get a fair opportunity. You know, and I think that's what is lacking right now is that this doesn't look like a fair opportunity situation.
And it needs more media attention. I mean, I don't want to say it's because of the victims here because they're all black, but, you know, my mind can't help DT but gravitate toward that. We report things that we think people are interested in. We also report things that we think have more value. And really, this sends a message to a lot of people that, again, black lives don't matter. Okay. And I know, again, I know the critics will say that all lives matter. Folks, all lives do matter. Every life, every person, every baby, every child, every adult, every race, every gender, everybody matters. But when you have black bodies being shot down in our city streets, we need to talk about that. It's an impact on our society, not just in the black community, but throughout our society. DT, I don't know. We're in dire times right now, my brother.
We are. And we talk about the fear. We talk about the uncertainty that surrounds us on a daily basis. And we need now to find ways to gravitate more toward our peace, right?
Yeah, we do, and especially in this season.
In the season.
I mean, you know, look at what we're talking about. I mean, and again, at One Mic, One Voice, nothing's off the table. So I want to transition in our last few moments on this episode. One of our listeners posted that they wanted us to address. And I'll broaden what he wanted us to do. He wanted us to talk about the celebrities that don't give back to the community, black celebrities that make it and don't give back to the community. But I like to broaden kind of his statement with a question and to say, for those who, quote unquote, make it out of the hood, okay, whatever that means, are we obligated to give back to the community?
I would say 100% yes. And I'll tell you why, man. It's because growing up, I was actually fortunate enough to be able to participate in lots of community service activities. That was going to nursing homes and sitting with the elderly and playing games. That was going to the food bank and preparing boxes for families to have food across America. That was going out in the community and picking up trash in the neighborhood so that we have a cleaner place to live. And those early experiences, man, they taught me so much more about just being able to give back and being able to reach back in places where you didn't think maybe you'd be effective or to just do something small for somebody that's going to go such a long way. And I think that as people who have made it, quote unquote, I think we do have that moral responsibility to give back in any way that we can.
So, and I think that's beautiful what you said, and beautiful things that you were taught and you were involved in and you continue to do. So I like the more responsibility that you're talking about.
Look at what has been done for us, you know, to be able to live and be and experience the things that we get to do. And it's like, you know, somebody laid that groundwork for it to happen. You know, no matter how it happened, it happened. And so while we're here, we must do what we can to, you know, stretch that back to the next generation.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with you. And I think you're right. I think that's the way to look at it and to respond to a certain obligation. I just don't know if people. How can I say this? I don't know if I see that as a requirement of people. Mm-hmm. I see that as a as you have described, an internal thing that the individual desires to give back. In other words, I understand the principle in which you laid out very, very eloquently. That's the principle, folks. Okay, the road was paved before us. Okay, you didn't pave it yourself. With blood, sweat, and tears, paved the road. So therefore, yeah, you need to give back. And so I think that it's an internal thing. I don't know if I can put that obligation on someone that doesn't feel that way. I'm not saying that that one shouldn't. I just don't know if it's a requirement. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I mean, and then you have other people who feel like they're owed something. And so they never get over that hump of being able to give because I'm still waiting on mine.
Yeah. Man, I got a buddy, man.
Give me mine.
I got a buddy. Every time I go back to Milwaukee, I can't see him because he always like, man, you know, let me go and get 20. I'm like, man, why are you always asking me for, man, well, you made it, man. You made No, listen.
Still okay. Got bills, bro.
Thank God.
Still got to live, bro. Still got kids, bro.
I'm like,
man.
I'm like, no, get a job. Yeah. Okay, that's the answer to your request. But, you know, the question about celebrities, the ones that make it to a level that not many of us can achieve, and I think financially is what the brother's implying, which I think is a great question. Those that don't give back. Well, I mean, part of it, if you don't give back, I think some would say, well, don't support what they do.
That's true.
I mean, you don't buy their product. You don't go see their movies. You don't buy their, you know, their CDs. You don't support them. I mean, but I think, let me get into something that I think is real deep too. This idea of coming from nothing and all of a sudden having an excess of things change people.
I agree. Okay. I mean, and it's part of it is, you know, like you're saying, not having for so long. And it's like when you finally do get, it's like you do it, you overdo it sometime.
Or you say, I ain't giving you nothing.
Or you don't do nothing, exactly.
I ain't giving you nothing, okay? Pick yourself up. You know, look what I did. I'm not going to give you my money. Or feel no obligation to from which they have come. In other words, there's a disconnect. You know, I'm in Hollywood. I'm in L.A. now. I'm in Monaco. I'm all over the place. And you know what? Ray, I don't know Ray no more. I'm doing my thing, you know. So
I had to distance myself.
I had to distance myself. Exactly. I'm living high now. Yeah, I think some of that exists. Okay. So,
and I thought on Way. I think when people do, like you say, come from nothing, quote unquote nothing, it's like we all came with something, right?
Absolutely.
But that process can harden a person. Growing up, and you know, you feel like nothing's ever given to you, nothing's ever, you know, laid out for you, and the way you think about it, you know, your perspective in it all is really like, once you, like you're saying, once you get up to that level, can be the difference maker in how you perceive yourself and the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, if nobody ever made you felt included or made you feel like you were going to make it, it's like, okay, now that I have, I'm about to show you.
Absolutely.
I'm about to stun on you.
I'm rolling through with my Benz. I'm rolling through with the Bentley. You can't even ride in it.
No, not even wash it for me. It's like, you can't even put water on my car.
Exactly. I'm perplexed because I don't want to name names of celebrities that give back and those that don't. On a personal note, I will say, though, I feel obligated like you, that your influence, not just resources. See, this is where we get messed up in the head. We think that it's always about money. It's not about money. It's about coming back, spend a day at the library, reading with kids, okay?
Small stuff.
Yeah, small stuff. Go down, like you say, as a celebrity, go down to the food bank and give out stuff, not just because your team's doing it, but it's the right thing to do, not just because it's the holidays. Maybe it's Tuesday during the week and you can give back. I think that the black community, and we know the community, what does that mean? It's one without borders. But I think too many have moved to the middle class and beyond and simply said, man, them folks down there crazy. I ain't going to have no part of them. Okay,
don't relate to them.
I don't relate to them. Look at them. You know, I ain't, no,
I'm not a part of that.
We having a dinner party this evening. You know, we having champagne
with gold wine glasses.
But it's gonna be an extravaganza. We're talking all uppity.
But you know,
call me Duke Ellington.
Right. Like I say, a butler with that. All I call him is butler. But you know, it is that. I think it is that mentality that changes, and that's why I say it's inside. It's inside. And if you don't have a compassion and an empathy for people, don't matter, they're black or white, Latino, Hispanic, Asian, doesn't matter. If you don't have a compassion and an empathy and a giving spirit, it doesn't matter what community you come out of, you're not going to give back. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is a measure of a person. And I would say that, you know, to our request from our listener, if you're not giving back, don't buy their stuff.
I mean, and there are lots of other celebrities too who do, you know, give back in abundance, but you don't hear those stories as well.
No, you don't. And I think those are the heroes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you out there on Front Street talking about what you're doing, then really is it about helping or it's about bringing attention to yourself and furthering your career? And so I think it's the ones, you know, behind the scenes that, you know, that are doing big things.
And it's so hard for us now to be selfless in society, man. It's really, really hard to say that, you know, I'm not going to tell everybody about what I'm doing right now, you know, but because, you know, social media too is another platform. People get to, quote unquote, you know, stunt.
Yeah.
And so that becomes a status thing too, if used the wrong way.
Yeah. It's the desire for self affirmation in our society is just off the chain, man. I mean, everybody's doing it now. I mean, everybody. I mean, you see these pictures even on Facebook, man. I look at some of these pictures. I'm like, what is that? You know, like what were you thinking? You know, like what statement does that make? You know, it's just like, look at me.
Look at me now.
At my body. You know, and
you know, wait a minute. Long time ago when we had the talk shows like Ricky Lake and Jenny Jones, they had the makeover video, the shows, right? And it's like, look at me now. And so now you don't have to wait to get a show on Mario or on Jenny Craig or wherever else. You can just hit them with it. It's like, boom, look, 20 pounds down. Look at me now.
And you know, if you're making a statement about, you know, changing your life.
That's
and,
great.
Encouraging. That's great. Oh, yeah, that's wonderful. But some of these photos, man, they don't have no explanation, man. I don't know what to, I guess you're just showing off or something. I guess you just want everybody to, you know, you want 300, 400 likes. I don't get it. But this desire for affirmation, I just think, you know, I think people are hurting in our society to be loved, man. And it's a sad situation. I don't know what else to say about. You know, I know Denzel gives back. You know, he's a brother that's been doing a wonderful things. I said I wouldn't name people, but you know, you got all types of other black people that are involved in foundations and literacy and education. And shout out to those that are doing that. But to those that are not. You just got, you can't, they in business because people buying their stuff. You stop buying it, then they don't have nothing to give back. Then they back in the hood and somebody's got to give back to them.
Right.
You know, maybe that's the answer to that.
I mean,
that,
I think it's important that you just said that though, because it is a cycle. You know, like I talked about earlier, us being here on the necks and blood and sweat and tears of other people who came before us. But, you know, holding ourselves to that accountability because there was something that happened before we came along.
Yeah. Common's a cat that gives back, man. You know, Ice Cube gives back, man. I mean, there's a bunch that do. But again, I guess, and let me say this. I'm more concerned about the local level, really, to be honest with you.
Where you come from.
Where I come from, where I am. In the midst of trying to improve the lives of people, I'm more concerned about what I'm doing and what folks on that level are doing. Years ago, DT, I stopped looking to others outside of the community, to national leaders and even to state leaders. It's about those in the community. Doing what is necessary. Those are the heroes and the sheroes, as they say, in the community. And so, should celebrities give back? Absolutely. Whether they do or not is irrelevant to me. Just to be honest, because I'm trying to, and I know this brother too is very active in his community and he's doing things in his community. So by no means am I talking disparagingly against him. And I'm sure he shares these same thoughts that it's about what we are doing. But folks, this holiday season is about that. And it's great that he brought that up because it's about giving back.
I will say that internal value is eternal value.
Yeah. Eternal.
Eternal.
Life. You know how long that is, Richard? Eternity. You measure that? Huh? You gonna live eternally, bro?
Spirit wise, forever.
Yeah, you opening up a can of worms. Can of worms. But no, you're right. It's everlasting, right? Those because you hand those down, those values hand down, and obviously they were given to you, and I know you're giving them to others as well. But man, it's you know, the season, man, Thanksgiving, Christmas, man, it's all about love. You know, it's all about family, friends. Man, I just wish we could just stop the hate.
Man, you know, I don't know if I want to share this or not.
Go ahead.
I will.
Go ahead.
You know, I thought about something the other day, and, you know, we talk about legacy. We talk about what we'll leave behind. We talk about the types of impressions they will make on people while we're here.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, man, you know what? I want my life to be a love story.
Mm. Love story. See, I knew that brother was romantic.
That's just going to be the best way for me to go
out.
I knew he was
romantic, man. I could tell where the brother walked. He was romantic.
Love.
No, that's a beautiful thing, man. So expand a little bit on that, man.
Oh, okay. You're going to put me on the spot. Okay, look, I got Richard over here looking in my eyes and stuff. Like, come on, Richard, with the eye contact, man.
he ain't Belva.
But no, seriously, it's just been what I've been shown, mm-hmm. you know, growing up. It's just been a part of my life. And I think a lot of love being showed to me early on and even throughout, you know, my adulthood, that's just been something I wanted to reflect back to people that mm-hmm. come into my life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. That's beautiful because I think that enriches people and it keeps you at a place. I think just of a very good perspective on what life is about because it's not about materialism.
It ain't even about you, you know, it's like not even about me, you know, it's just that my stepdad always said, man, who you are will show in what you do and how you treat people.
Yeah.
And I keep that with me every day because I know that those are the things that people are going to look at when they're trying to figure out who DT is. Who is Deshaun Thorne? What is this guy about? Yeah. And those are the two things that I want to be able to show.
Well, man, wow, man. That's why you got a house. I'm just going to say that. See, those qualities, man, lead to just great things and great things happening into your life. And you know, what you bring into the room when you step in. And I like how you said, you know, what do people think of you? And that's so important. And we know, like everybody, you know, you have your critics. I have my critics. But at the end of the day, the people that know you, the people that you influence and the people that influence you, you know, at the base of that is love and respect and dignity and putting the other person before yourself. And it's cool, man, to end on that note. DT,
that was a good
we talked about all the, you know, the drama in the world and all the challenges. But folks, at One Mic, One Voice, we just want to encourage you to love one another. I mean, that's what love your family, your friends, and be thankful. Mm-hmm. Be thankful for the people that you have in your life. And if you don't have positive people in your life, get rid of them.
Ask them.
Get them out. They don't need to be there. You need positive people that show and appreciate you and also speak value into your life because, folks, always remember history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we saw nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.